Hello.
Yeah, okay, cool.
So, hi guys, welcome. Thank you all for being patient with us for starting a little bit late at our Liquid Democracy, a chance for DM25 workshop. Just to do a very quick introduction.
You can stop and ask a question or ask for some more information about any of the things that Carlos is going to be talking about at any time. It's very important that whoever is speaking really has to talk into the microphone. This is because we're recording all the audio and also some video when we intend to make it like into a podcast to, you know, all the knowledge that we're kind of accumulating here and exchanging to give it a longer lifespan by passing it on to all our other members around Europe. And we're doing this for both spaces, so this is quite important. So don't just shout out, but maybe raise your hand or repeat it into the microphone, for instance. A very quick one. Carlo is a member of DM25, and he's been with Pirates for about 8 years, and he has a lot of experience in kind of the main topic of today's overarching theme, structures within political movements. Now, liquid democracy is a very particularly interesting structure, I think. He's going to be explaining us a little bit about this, and also kind of focusing, from what I understand, on this idea that often we all get swept up in the enthusiasm of building something new without looking around and realizing that there have been others that did similar things, and maybe we can learn from their mistakes. I think it's kind of important, also at this kind of crossroad that DM25 is arriving at now, to look past and future to make the best of it. So, Carlo, I'll give it to you, and again, feel free at any time to say, hey, I have a question, and then we'll just pass the microphone to you, and yeah, that will work. Yeah. Excellent.
Also, if you have an observation or something, want to get the debate in between or something. So, we've been having a great party yesterday, and I love the atmosphere of DM25. It reminds me of the early days of the Piraten movement. It was just the same kind of family feeling. It was the same movement and same feeling also at the first meetings of Occupy and at the Italian Pirate Party. It was the same feeling during the occupation of the Ballet Theater, or also at the occupation of the Volksbühne last year. It's a similar feeling I can tell by the way people interact in Demokratie in Bewegung. It's a similar feeling I was told by several people who used to be at the Five Star Movement in Italy before Beppe Grillo made it clear that it was not going to be a democracy. So this happens frequently. We frequently manage to get the right people together, and then something goes wrong almost every time. So I'll first bring up some harsh criticism, and then I'll work myself to an optimistic outlook, which happens to include a liquid democracy technology, if you like so. So the Five Star Movement's voting platform is totally intransparent. You cannot verify how many people have voted something. There's no way to tell if the voting was legitimate in any way. Unfortunately, hackers have successfully got into it, and they can modify the vote results anytime they like, and the Rousseau team is so hopeless they can't even figure out how the guy got in. So the hacker is still inside and can falsify any voting result as they like. That's the current condition of the Five Star Movement. The Five Star Movement is extremely popular in Italy. It's risking to become win the elections, the upcoming elections. Can you imagine? You're about to have Italy is about to have people in charge that have been elected using a voting tool which is falsifiable, not reliable, hacked. It's absurd. Luckily, in many countries, this wouldn't be legal. It's just a bug in the Italian constitution that there's no law protecting against non-democratic political movements. So right now we have a similar situation here. We have one person and that has, or at least there are some people that have the access to the vote results, to how the voting happens with a DM25 platform. And it is risky to presume that such a person can never be blackmailed, can never be forced to do something they don't like, especially if DM actually becomes successful. And there are tons of people that would have an interest in making decisions of DiEM go in some wrong direction. That's also why on a constitutional level, on a legal level, the definition of democracy includes the verifiability of the voting procedures. And if you have no verifiable procedure, you might feel like it's a democracy, but it is, legally speaking, not a democracy. The other thing that is makes me a little nervous is this architecture by which the non-profit association is separate from the actual website. Like the M25 is kind of a loose group of people registered on a website. Formally, it doesn't even have a real structure. And the structure that exists is a non-profit association, which is disconnected from the political movement. And the members of the association promise to always do the things that the movement decides to do. And this is a legal method to not require inner democracy in the movement. So the movement can remain not verifiable, not accountable, by means of this trick. So if Belgian authorities require you to have certain regulations in your political association, that probably has to do with ensuring inner democracy. And this mechanism of having an extra association is probably serving the purpose to avoid these legal requirements. But that's exactly the risk that we're facing if we're avoiding these legal requirements. We're risking building an architecture which can later be exploited. So the current situation is that the Westmasters, who have the access to the voting database of VN25, are not legally bound to the association and to the laws in Belgium or elsewhere in Europe. And I'm afraid that the electoral wing might be a similar kind of structure, considering that DiEM25 in its current structure would not be able to participate in German elections because it's not a legal political party without inner democracy. To participate in German elections, we would be creating a political party, which then has to comply by inner democracy rules according to the Parteiengesetz. And therefore, it is interesting to have it such a way that everybody who participates in the electoral wing promises to do as the movement says, and this way bypassing the inner democracy requirements. And that's kind of scary. It can just backfire so hard. So I get to the point, looking at these things, are political parties really so bad? I've been doing activism before. I dealt with parties, just doing random activism, and the best thing you can do is end up doing lobbyism in Brussels or at the talk to the European Commission and try to get whatever through what is your political motivation. With a movement, we are much stronger, we can do much greater action, but who runs the movement? Who's at the top of the movement? How is the movement organized? And as we've seen, movements end up not being democratic. In the case of Occupy Wall Street, in the case of the Five Star Movement, also Podemos has somewhat questionable democracy. I don't know exactly about Syriza, but I might also be nervous about that. So that architecture isn't always the best to actually ensure democracy. And unfortunately for humanity, political parties have so far been the least worst architecture for governance. We all hate political parties, but we haven't figured out anything better. So how do we want to not end that way, and what's going wrong? This is a frequent problem that a lot of political movements have, so it's not very specific for DiEM25, but still, after the experience that I made with the pirate parties, I would say it's really important for people to create a safe space of free speech, that nobody can attack you on what you say or attack you on who you are so that you stop saying what you're saying, and reduce your ability to participate in a political movement by aggressive forms of aggression, forms of these kind of things. We found out that it's inevitable to have moderators fulfill a rule of like awareness and creating the space of safety, both in real life and especially when it comes to online forums, where people would easily start insulting each other, attacking each other. This has to be stopped at the root. And so that is something that DiEM25 is already practicing. But it's problematic if the moderation is run by the same people who are leading the organization. Because most of the criticism will always be about the leadership of the movement, of the whatever. If you elect leaders to run something, then a lot of criticism will always be towards the leaders. And then it gets an obvious conflict of interest if the people that were put in charge to take care of moderation are part of the leadership. So in that case, I recommend to have an independent moderation mechanism. And also to avoid moderators getting too powerful, that's where you want to have an inner justice system. If a moderator is abusing their powers, you can talk to the Court of Arbitration and tell them, I'm having problems here. I would like to exercise my right to free speech. and I'm not insulting anybody, why am I being moderated? Humanity hasn't found nicer solutions to these things. The separation of powers concept is the best thing sociology has come up with. And it's better to have it than not to have it. It's not perfect. It will not guarantee justice, but it's the least worst. Another thing that we experienced, especially with the pirates, as a huge problem is when spokespersons go wild and start battling each other. So one thing I would say is we do need a coordination in a movement, but the spokespeople shouldn't at the same time be coordinators, because in fact they are busy doing spokes, being the kind of public figures, and they are in need of coordination rather than being coordinators. And it's important that they all speak from in one voice. At least that has been extremely successful for the pirates in 2011. There was this kind of unwritten rule, or I don't know what it was, but everyone giving interviews to the media was always saying the same things. And that was had a very strong impact on the electorate. They were very impressed how the message was always the same. And it only broke down after the success of the elections. Then suddenly everyone in the pirate movement started thinking about their own career, their own opinion. I want to tell my own opinion to the television as well. And so we started not only having different opinions on TV, it has devastating effects if any of those opinions have not gone through a process of collective consensus, but they are just the ideas of one person. It's enough for that person to make a mistake. And the population outside will always judge your entire movement by the people saying something. So if you let them say their own opinion, they will just define who you are instead of being you the ones who define who the movement is. And that can backfire if there's some inconsistency, if they are just slightly not having bad ideas in the public, or in the worst case, if you're actually successful enough to have gotten people into parliaments. And then the parliaments, people in the parliaments, which are legally disconnected from the people running the movement, running the party, if they start talking to each other using the media, which is something which frequently happens with other political parties as well. Depends how stable your democratic system is, but I would recommend it's better not to do this in the media. In the case of the pirates, it has been devastating. It totally destroyed the public trust in the pirate movement. The coordinating collective is an important instrument that you created, so that's a good thing. And there is something that the fans of radical transparency do not like to hear. It is necessary to have secrets. It is necessary to have strategic thoughts, and they belong somewhere. And for example, a typical example would be I was once in the other role. Like, I've been in the base part of the Berlin pirate movement at the beginning. I was just supporting, just working, just helping, etc. And when we got our first election success, the Italian media started asking for somebody that could talk to them in Italian. So I was suddenly catapulted to the other side, becoming a media figure in Italy. Nobody knows in Germany. But in Italy, I was on the radio, on the television, all that stuff, because I was the Berlin pirate who actually spoke Italian. So I was lucky. I didn't have to do any elbow fighting to have that role of having a representative role for a period of time and to understand what it means from that perspective. So I totally understand. It's not simple. It's not easy to be on that side either. And one thing that can happen is if you are, I later was a referent in the parliament, in the Italian parliament, I participated in the creation of political motions, and so I was dealing with people in other political movements. And they would sometimes tell me things like, well, we're considering to do this and that in 3 months, that might be interesting for you guys pirates, but it's not public, you must not tell everybody. So suddenly I was having an information which is of strategic importance for the pirate movement, but I cannot tell the entire assembly because the assembly might be having people that will tell, which is exactly. So you need to make a selection. What happens if you don't formalize this is that you create informal structures of knowledge, informal structures of power, because then I'm forced to choose whom to trust to tell this this information. And I create informal groups that know more than others. And that can be devastating in the long run. It's something that happened with the Greens in the 80s. It can happen easily in every movement that does not formalize leadership. So let's not call it leadership, because knowing strategy should not immediately mean that you have leadership. It's important to have a way for this information to get somewhere, because if there's no official way, then you must always suspect, well, is this person, we also had somebody else doing this kind of things, and he was always keeping his connections, his networking to himself, all private, and trying to have a personal advantage from it. And you can't be angry at somebody if there's no rules to regulate that. There's multiple risks with it. Instead, if you have an organ which is in charge of strategy and you say all secrets have to be reported to this organ, otherwise you might kind of be keeping something to yourself for your own advantage, which is not correct for the movement. And with the obligation to report it, you're also free from the weight of having of knowing something secret. So as with this knowledge comes a lot of power. We already have rules in the organizing principles that people in the coordinating collective wouldn't be candidates for elections, so they shouldn't serve a political office. Those are good ideas, good things. They should just do coordination. I really mean that. And my recommendation would be that there is still a way to do strategic decisions together, and I later will talk about a virtual board of directors, but the coordinating collective can formulate it in a way that it is abstract, generic, without precise information about who and when. So the CC can plan for a surprise demonstration in front of the office of the ministry of whatever, but they can still get the permission without exposing the details. And here's one of the most powerful tools. That's something that we never had in the German pirate movement, which is a shame. We introduced it in the Italian pirate movement. Actually, the Italian pirates did, and I arrived there and said, you guys are crazy. But actually, it worked out pretty well. They suggested, let's not have physical assemblies anymore. Let's all move it into liquid feedback. Where you can have both decisions coming from the bottom, people that are just randomly having an idea, they can start a proposal that leads to decision making, be it for programming for the program of the party, or it might also be something pragmatic. And if there's people in certain organs, or if there's people that are already in the parliament that have a requirement to have a decision by a certain time, because then the parliament will decide, etc. They have the possibility to introduce something from the top and have a participation top-down. So both is possible. There's no limitation. You can get rapid free feedback from the entire movement on issues also quick if necessary. And a tool like that can also take financial decisions, so you avoid the typical architectures which make financial corruption too easy. I'm very proud that we never had a case of financial corruption in the Italian Pirate Party, not that I could even imagine, or like if there was any doubt, I would possibly doubt it, but I never saw anything like that. I heard that it happened in the German Pirate Party. So you would expect the Italians to be more corrupt than the Germans, but I guess it's a question of... Yeah, I mean, we Italians kind of think that way. I'm saying it from an Italian perspective. I grew up in Italy, and Italians would expect it to be this way. And... yeah, and the virtual board of directors can also be implemented in a mechanism like that. And that means, yeah, well, I'll get to it. Why am I suggesting to go for liquid democracy? Well, we have typical problems with all existing forms of democracy. I mean, none of the forms of democracy is going to be perfect, and we're just on the search for the least worst. And representative democracy, at first, feels really well. You elect one among us, and... But I don't really need to mention all these things to you, right? I mean, you know what the problems of representative democracy are. An aspect which might be subtle is you send somebody to your parliament who is one of you, and still that person will not be able to satisfy all the expectations. So they will get feedback. There will always be people that are not satisfied with what they decide, because there are always people of the opposing opinion. And if you don't have a tool which tells these people who is actually the minority, who is the majority, what the opinion of the entire movement is, if you don't have a way to tell, then they don't know that they shouldn't annoy the parliamentary. And the parliamentary doesn't know, is this person right, is this person wrong? So at the end, they have no other choice than to decide by themselves. It is quite frequent that even the best people will start feeling very lonesome in the position of power, because they don't have a reasonable feedback that tells them where to go and what to do. And that is something very powerful that Liquid Feedback was able to do for us, to help parliamentaries get an idea of what we want from them. Problems of physical direct democracy. Hello, you are the travel elite. You are the ones who can afford to travel to the meetings, who enjoy all the beautiful aspects, who get this warm feeling we're a family, and who have more, who actually also wield more power and influence on the movement. That can backfire. That many people who are sitting at home many of them will trust what is happening here and will think it is cool, and some of them will always feel the uncomfortable and untrusting in direction of the others who decided these things and I wasn't there. And they will produce more and more pressure as time grows, as more diffidence comes up, as more stress enters the movement, as soon as it gets more successful, as soon as it achieves things, this kind of disconnect creates a lot of trouble. So that is a big mistake that the German pirates made. They decided everything in general assemblies, not using the tools that they themselves invented, which is ridiculous. Like, they essentially invented liquid feedback, even though, I mean, those people have then separated from the pirates because they were dissatisfied, and now they say we have nothing to do with the pirates. But essentially it came from there, and it ended up not getting properly used in Germany. And and the consequence that the travel elite would actually decide everything in the party, and there were thousands of people cut out that used to participate in the great liquid feedback. Another typical aspect, especially of direct democracy, is the dominance of the extroverts, like me right now. I'm dominating the situation because I have a story to tell. I hope that's okay because I have a story to tell. And also on the internet, you can easily get an effect of dominance of those who have more time to be active. So if you have the same platform, if you do direct democracy on a digital level, then you typically risk the actives on the digital level. Yeah, so you run that risk, which is something that liquid democracy is designed to compensate for. So 2,000 years of democracy. My expectation is that every kind of model between representative and direct democracy has been tried, and we know all the defects, and it's our hope lies with technology, which gives us new possibilities. And there are risks with digital direct democracy. If you just poll people for an opinion, that's a thing that the Alternative für Deutschland, the populist demagogue movement, did here in Berlin for the Berlin elections. They sent a survey to everyone, and people were able to just click on all their favorite prejudice. Oh, I don't like homosexuals. I don't like this. I don't like that. There was no discourse. There was no debate. There was no dealing with reasonable arguments. Everyone was just free to click their favorite prejudice. We ended up having that horrible program from that group. Even if you do it slightly better, you're still at risk of maximizing psychological biases, which are individual biases, like I already have an opinion, I just want to find somebody that agrees, or the Dunning-Kruger effect, which is particularly tricky, is the effect that you think you already know enough on the subject when you actually just scratch the surface and you're not ready to actually take a decision. And that's a tricky one because it needs a certain culture to decide, okay, I'm not ready to take this decision, I should better let somebody else do that. If you do that, then in the case of a simple direct democracy, there's no transparency of who is trusting whom. I might be looking at the opinions of other people and copycat that opinion, but we don't know who has been influencing who and how it worked. Especially in a movement like DiEM25, there are a lot of people doing a debate over Facebook, and we know how powerful Facebook is in manipulating the opinions of people. That is actually dangerous. So troops, trolls, and troublemakers might be having an effect. That's a paper that came out in 2012 and describes the power of troll armies. And another paper I got through DiEM, it's a paper that analyzed if people are asked spontaneously on certain knowledge questions, they would get a lot of things wrong. Like, what is your opinion that, I don't know any examples. Instead, if those people were sitting down at a table for half an hour discussing the topic and then take a decision, then these people would make much better choices than before. So the mere exercise of debate and consensus creates much better wisdom than a plain direct democracy. And even small groups can be more intelligent than a large group being participating in a direct democratic style. That would be something to learn from. And I have this idea that we could actually achieve even better collective rationality. I mean, liquid feedback is a tool which enhances the chances of a collective rationality. That's the experience that we made in 2010 when we first used it. It was just freshly programmed. I will get there, yes. But right now, yeah, I'm throwing in some things that I don't have a slide for. one amazing feeling we got was the stuff that was coming out of that instrument was so much more intelligent than us as individuals. So it was a feeling that we got that it gave us kind of a collective intelligence. And it made us win the elections. Everyone in the Berlin Pirate Party in 2011 agreed that the most important element for winning those elections was how we developed the content and how we presented it, how convinced we were and how good it was. And it had all to do that we were using liquid feedback, randomly using it the right way. I later found out it was casual. It was just the right moment. We didn't take the precautions for a long run. But right there, we used it the right way, and it worked wonderfully. So how can you improve fact-based decision-making? Yes, even if you use liquid feedback in a way as it is, there might still be people making demagogic proposals. They propose something which sounds super nice and super easy, and the implications of that proposal are actually something that you don't agree with or is just plain wrong. How do you deal with that? And we realize that is still a problem for digital democracy. And a way to deal with it is to kind of make your discussion platforms less oriented on posting opinions. Well, that's always easy. Oh, my opinion is this. And that's a terrible practice because there's always the risk whoever has exposed their opinion feels obliged to stay of that opinion. There's a psychological tendency, a sociological tendency to stick to your opinion because you position yourself publicly with it. And that is actually very damaging. We need a process by which we first collect all the knowledge, we discuss the facts, and then the opinion actually only exists in form of support for proposals and not in form of articulation. But science itself is a complicated thing. It might sometimes, how safe is science itself? Itself, it doesn't have a proper consensus method. It's just a lot of people agreeing that it's good. If we create a consensus method to assert things that we agree upon, like the planet is round, it's not flat, then somebody who is making a proposal based on the planet being flat can be stopped, because then you can tell, dear Integrity Council, you need to have a legal structure for that. Unfortunately, we don't have anything else. It's not like you can use artificial intelligence to eliminate wrong proposals. But if the entire movement agrees that a certain fact is right or wrong, then you can apply that fact to the proposals and eliminate proposals that would get you in big trouble.
Who designs the proposals?
I'll get to that. Everybody can write proposals, and everyone can fact-check proposals. I'll get to that. Another thing that happens on all kinds of democratic assemblies and platforms, if somebody does not agree with your proposal and he's run out of reasons, out of good argumentation, it is very popular to attack it on formal grounds. Oh, you didn't place it in the proper category. Oh, you didn't take this and that into the proposal. We must not, the most advanced ones are the ones prepared that a lawyer would present. A lawyer would say, no, that's not legal, you can't vote that. And then the assembly would be inclined to vote against their political honest choice on the base of an uncertainty, of a fear, a doubt that that proposal might not be legal. That is terrible, and it's happening in all political parties on Earth. And by using this kind of separation, we could impede that. Somebody cannot attack something on formal grounds. They have to talk to the Integrity Council and tell the Integrity Council, I think that proposal is formally incorrect. Could you please check it legally? So there's a legal body in charge of checking the correctness of proposals. without them having to know Earth. They just need to make sure that a proposal is in agreement with all the previous decisions of the movement. So it's not something that too complicated or giving them too much power. It is very, very limited what they can do at that point. And that would protect you from that kind of side channel attacks. We get to liquid democracy slowly. You're still interested? Would you like to talk about something else? Okay, I guess. So the concept of liquid democracy is it's an in-between thing between representative and direct democracy. You can participate yourself if you feel you are really competent on the matter. You worked yourself through the entire debate. You looked at all the argumentation, and you are really confident, okay, I know what I want here. But you can abstain if you feel like, oh, the movement has always been taking good decisions. Why should I insist on having mine? You can just abstain. Or you can delegate to a person that you feel is probably going to represent me the best. And this is a useful move because it kind of creates the effect that experts and people that are familiar with on a topic get a stronger voice in the decision making. In a democratic way, in an agreed upon way. And the big difference to representative democracy is you can change your mind on the delegation at any time. So you're not going to be stuck for 5 years with the person you elected. So examples in the case of liquid feedback, you can choose different delegations for different topics. Unfortunately, other liquid democracy tools do not have that. So you might know people that are really good in other areas, foreign affairs, education, whatever. And in the case of civil rights, I feel like I'm the expert. I want to do everything myself. But if there's a really, really important decision, I can always go in the middle and decide myself.
By deciding, you mean voting, right?
Voting. That is, yeah, but it's also about the consensus measurement. So it's not only the final vote, which might as well even be something we don't always want. So I also recommend situations where you want to measure the consensus in all time for the future without actually having a final vote if it's not strictly necessary. An important factor is the mechanism of the transitive delegations. The people that have received your delegation can themselves delegate to somebody else. So you can delegate by your belly feeling. You just delegate to somebody you trust because you have a good feeling about that person. And you know that person is honest. That's what you want. And if that person starts looking into the debates more precisely because they have more time to do it, etc., they will kind of maybe find the right expert or something. So you don't have to know all the experts, which is also a can of worms. Like figuring out who the experts are is itself a challenge. That makes it useful to create a kind of a hierarchy of power, which is still fully democracy enabled by the democracy by your own choices. And still, you can change at any moment. You can pick somebody else. And the nice thing that arrived far too late, in 2015, there was this excellent research paper that analyzed all the database of the pirate decision-making in the early years. And they found out that this architecture actually does the intended job. It works. The so-called superdelegates, which frequently became a source of scare, like, oh, there's somebody that has 50 delegations, oh my goodness, he's going to decide everything by themselves. It's actually a democratic modeling which makes sense, and it stabilizes the vote, especially in those situations when there's not enough attention. For example, on a side topic that most people are not interested in, let's talk, I don't know, 5 years ago nobody would have cared about glyphosate. Who knows, it might be something that not many people are interested in. Now it has come to the media, it's a big deal. But before, maybe nobody would have cared. So you have a very small group of people who are actually participating in the decision-making on such a specific topic that's only relevant for... It's actually relevant for everybody when we go and buy food, but not everybody cares. In that case, a lobby might be able to push some 10, 20 people in there and push their agenda, if it's a direct democratic system. In a liquid democratic system, there are people that the entire movement trusts that have much more voting power, so the lobby will not be able to impose their view. We've had lobbyists in the Pirate Party, and they never achieved anything. So that's something that is a plus. The liquid democracy, among the things it does is it protects against the dominance of the actives, the dominance of the extroverts, because on a platform like that, every voice is equal. When I did a presentation in Milan, a lady walked up to me and she said, "This is good for women." I don't know, but that's what she said. Actually, the idea is very old. It was first the first notable recording of the idea of proxy voting is from Lewis Carroll, the guy who wrote Alice in Wonderland. And it enables a group to search for more consensus and to have the consensus and the delegations have more weight in the debate and in eventual voting procedures and improve the democratic result of all of that. So it's not a debating platform. It's not a conversational tool. It's a tool to measure consensus and to present the current options of consensus. Like you present proposals, you add modification amendments to the proposals, but it's not a place where you discuss them all the time. That is a bit impractical. It could be useful to integrate a forum, a platform for discussion. The advantage is, since it has very few network transactions, it can handle hundreds of thousands of people. So one server enough can handle a movement much larger than VM25. And it would be cool if we adapted some forum software in a way that it integrates with Liquid Feedback and makes use of the knowledge and consensus database in a way that while you have a debate, while you have a conversation on a topic, you can always see what the current opinions are. You can always see whose opinions are probably going to be more influential than others. The way Liquid Feedback structures debates is there's a phase of something being new. You have to pass a certain quorum for the new proposed debate to enter a debate phase. This helps avoiding discussions that the movement doesn't want to make. If a discussion is currently not interesting or it has been discussed before, whatever, then it simply doesn't pass the quorum and so the debate doesn't start. So you only have things in debate phase which are of general interest. When the debate phase has finished, there is a phase of verification by which you check if you still agree with the last version that was posted. This is a protection against authors making radical changes on the last minute. Like, they collected everyone's agreement at the beginning, and then they add one phrase that changes everything at the last minute. That would be bad. So in the case of the verification phase is the time that you have to realize, there's somebody's kidnapping our proposal. I will better tell everybody, so the proposal is loses the consensus before it goes into voting. And then there's the voting, which has its own mechanism. Liquid Feedback has policies that people can agree upon. Like in a foundational assembly, when we decide we want to do a new DM25 that has this kind of instrument at its base, we also propose ways to how to do these policies, so they are the same for everyone. There are no people that say, we have to decide this really quick or something. There's always a clear way when decisions are complete, and there's no strategic advantage by somebody telling how long something takes or when something has to be decided. The rules are always the same for everyone, and we agree on it democratically. There are four phases. The durations are can be chosen, decided upon. It is decided how much quorum you need to reach to enter the phase of debate and how much you need to be an acceptable choice in the voting. And what kind of consensus percentage is necessary to consider the voting a winner. Because we've experienced that a simple 50-50 or like 51% versus 49% voting decisions, like simple majority, are really, really bad for the social environment of a political movement if half of the movement is disagreeing and is frustrated. And our experience is also all the good decisions that are really, in retrospect, I looked at all the decisions we made. Because we were doing the mistake of doing majority voting, and in retrospect, I looked at all the decisions and saw all the decisions that were really good, they had a large consensus. They didn't need majority voting. And all the decisions that we chose by a tiny margin, those were the ones that got us in real trouble, and we shouldn't have taken them.
Do you have a number? Percentage-wise?
Yeah, 50-50. Like, if something is just a simple majority, just 51, 52, 53.
What is better,
60, 70? Two-thirds is more likely to work out, three-quarters, 80%. If you have remaining amount of people of 10-20% that do not that thought it's a bad idea, then you can talk to them and say, hey, for this time we wanted to do it this way, please let us do it this way. If you are right, then we'll probably talk about it in a couple of years again, and then we'll probably agree with you. But for now, we want to take this decision, please be patient with us. And if it's 10-20%, then it's kind of okay. Then people can say, okay, the majority wanted to make this. I think it's a mistake, but okay, let's do it this way. I'll still be a DMer. I'm not going to stop participating because at a later point, I might be proven wrong and then I'm happy, or I might be proven right and then we'll have to discuss it again.
Looking back at your analysis, how many of the votes were like close margin and how many were big? Because I'm questioning, I mean, it's a good idea to have a big consensus, but how many, you know, it could also lead to a stale party if people don't agree on many things. I mean, how many were big consensus and how many were 50 or 51 to 49? Do you have like an estimate?
I have an estimate in both cases, I think. It's not like I really looked, but in the Italian party, it was an overwhelming number of consensus, large consensus decision, and only a few cases where it was problematic. And in the German party also saw a lot of things that were decided with a very large consensus on topics you would not expect. That the proposals were so illuminated and so intelligent that everyone would just say, yeah, okay, that makes sense. Whereas the decisions that were heavily debated, like the unconditional basic income, that got us in terrible trouble. Or the decision made at an assembly to introduce liquid feedback. It was decided at a physical assembly 50-50. So it started out with half of the party not collaborating. Obviously, it had to go wrong. So the instrument was never introduced the right way and was damaged from the beginning. And that's a problem we never had in the Italian party. So here's an example. It might have like, you have 7 days to convince some people, or up to 7 days to convince people that your topic that you want to discuss is important. You might be having a month of debate, or maybe you're having 3 months. You're having a verification phase, a voting phase. You might be having high or low percentages for things to become optional for voting. I think 30 is a bad idea, actually. And the results, in order to win, must reach two-thirds, for example. An alternative way of using liquid feedback, which is not described in the manuals, would be to use it in a search for consensus. That would be for example, to have a very high quorum for the issue to be considered an interesting debate, or to be a debate ready for to go in direction of voting, like this 80%. And until any proposal reaches 80% consensus, there's an ongoing unlimited measurement of the topic being debated. There's an ongoing process of remixing each other's proposals, trying to make it better and better and better, and getting more people to agree on the nice thing about the methods we use is it's not like a minimum, you end up doing a minimum agreement consensus. It's amazing that you frequently can actually still have very intelligent, innovative, advanced concepts in there. And it's a question of explaining them well and being convincing. And that is something that if you have enough time, actually works out. If you just have 3 hours and you're sitting in a room and you have to find a consensus, like in some commission in the European Parliament, then they are so under pressure that they will just use the least common denominator and not actually come up with something visionary. And these platforms are actually able to produce something better even if you're looking for a large consensus. Another thing that is missing from other liquid democracy tools, unfortunately, is the ability to separate the participants, have separate areas of interest for topics to discuss, political topics, which is totally fundamental because nobody can be an expert in all areas. And it totally slows you down if you have to choose a delegate for every debate that is starting. That's a killer. Instead, you can have all these ongoing debates and you're only active in the parts of the system that you care about while you have delegated or you're not participating in other areas. And this way, even if, like in the first year of liquid feedback in the Pirate Movement, in the Piratenpartei in Germany, there were 10,000 people participating. There were 1,000 people at the, in the period just before the General Assembly. There were like 1,000 people working on proposals at the same time. If you try to know everything that is going on, you're gonna be very busy. But that's not the intention. That's not the purpose. You should only look at things that you care about and leave other things to others. And that's something that is well organized in this tool. And if you, for any reason, have different degree of participation things, you might be having sections. But that's for example, if on the same machine there's also decisions being made by Demokratie in Bewegung, then you can have one section for DiEM25 and one section for Demokratie in Bewegung. And so the people have the same login, they can actually participate in decision making on two platforms. There's the distinction of an author who is writing a proposal and people who are supporters of proposals or potential supporters of a proposal. They can write an amendment, what they would like to change about the proposal, and they can value the amendment with, it should be changed, it must be changed, or otherwise I won't agree. And if they find an amendment proposal by somebody else, they can go there and say, no, that should in no way be done, or it must not be be implemented, or otherwise I will no longer agree. The distinction between should and must has an effect on the mathematics of the whole thing. In the case of should, you would you say you're not agreeing, but you would say, okay, I will accept it if the author introduced this into the proposal. In the case of must, it is really if you introduce this, then I'm not going to support your proposal anymore. And this mechanism allows you to continuously evaluate and measure the consensus of proposals and to create a hierarchy which ones are the most popular, etc. And so you have a visualization of the feeling, the general feeling of the movement on every topic. One cute aspect is that all criticism needs to be constructive. If you work, criticize a proposal, you have to produce something which is helpful for the proposal, which is in support. And if you totally disagree, then you actually should be supporting a counter-proposal or writing one. And this has been helpful to improve also the behavior aspects. One aspect which is suboptimal about liquid feedback is that the authors of the most popular proposals tend to be in a position of power. That could be improved by having, like, if somebody writes a similar proposal with just little changes, it could be improved the way these small changes are presented and are offered as an alternative proposal so that there is more dynamic in the consensus movement. That's something that could be improved. The new version has some improvements in that area. It might have been dealt with in Liquid Feedback version 4. Here's an example of voting. At a traditional referendum, there are people that would like to use the some old space that became free because the army moved away and doesn't need it anymore, whatever. Some people would like to erect a camping place. Some people would have a public garden, a park. And there are a lot of interests in building a shopping mall. And if you count this way, if the people just can choose between the three options, and in this case, the shopping mall would be winning. If instead you use a Condorcet or Schulze method of voting, like liquid feedback offers, you can put the choices you have in an order of preference. You can say, I prefer camping, but my second option would be the public park. And I'm strictly against edification. Or the other way around, I prefer the public garden, but I would also accept the camping. And whereas the people that want the edification, they would maybe also accept the camping. And if you do the maths on that kind of logic, then the park would clearly win, even though the red bar was bigger than was apparently bigger. But because the green and the yellow bars agree on something more than on the other, in this case, the public garden would be winning. So the method has the advantage of maximizing the satisfaction, the collective satisfaction of the participants, and has the disadvantage that it's not so easy to calculate, control, to check. You need a software, typically. The math is kind of complex. But if you can download the database, which you should be able to, then you can use your own software, your own program to check that the voting was correct. The method is also being used by other non-political groups for voting. And totally crucial aspect in liquid feedback is there is no secret voting. That has a lot to do with the technical near impossibility to have credible secret voting, but it also has to do with the discovery that, or the assumption that secret voting is actually not better. And that assumption has been proven by this nice paper from UC Berkeley and UC, yeah, and the IMF, the International Monetary Fund. They found out that vote buying and corruption is more likely in a situation of secret vote than in a transparent vote. Like in a transparent vote, everybody is looking at you. You can't do what the lobbyist is telling you. In a secret vote situation, the lobbyist can convince you and you can secretly vote in the interest of the lobbyist. So the assumption that that secret voting is good against corruption is wrong. Liquid feedback allows you to download the database, to check, to see all the votings, how everybody has voted, to see how the whole procedure has happened. And it's good if participants get to know each other well. And if there's a kind of trust hierarchy that you know your people on your own city, and people from other cities, you expect that they know each other as well in the same way, then you kind of can expect that the entire movement is made out of real people that you can trust.
You said no secret votes, but what is with social pressure? So if you think that, I don't know how to explain in English, but
yes,
probably
yes.
Know what I mean.
The pressure of corruption is mostly on politicians. Maybe I should tell a story. The Sicilian five-star movement, which on a regional scale is a very nice democratic thing. On the national scale, it's a mess, but on a regional scale, it's very, very nice. They have been using liquid feedback openly with their faces and names and pictures completely transparently and deciding together all the points in the program that made them win the elections. This has been a choice by exactly those people that have been plagued by the mafia for centuries. And their move against the mafia is total transparency. Why? That's interesting. And the thing is, if you are thousands of people, if you're so many, the mafia guy can't come and buy you all, or force you all, threaten you all. It only works if you have representative democracy where you can threaten, blackmail a few people. That seems to be the thing, why it works.
Yeah, but I'm more meant, for example, you're deciding about, let's say, a public swimming pool and or a garden. And you know that your family and your friend, they all prefer the garden, but you would prefer the swimming pool, but maybe you won't vote for the swimming pool because you think, okay, I don't want to get in trouble with my friends and family and so on. So it's really a basic example, but maybe you know what I mean.
That is still a clear case of we're only talking about the least worst democracy, I guess. That sounds a bit unsolvable at that point.
I must say that I'm completely against removing the secrecy of the vote because of the emails that we're getting already from people signing up to DM or thinking about signing up or writing us messages like, I would be signing up, but actually I work for a bank. I can't have anyone know that I support DM. And I think this becomes an issue as soon as you discuss not whether to build a swimming pool or a mall, but if you're deciding how much should the bank financial transaction fees should be, or how do we want to regulate this industry or that. There are suddenly a lot of people whose jobs depend on supporting a particular proposal or not, or who could lose their income if they are found to be voting against the interests of big companies.
Yes, that is another imperfection, another trade-off, that in this case it is safer for people that are in such a position to trust other people doing politics and not participate in such a thing. There are, either way you put it, either way you choose, you have this option and then you don't have verifiable voting. Or on the other hand, you want to have verifiable voting, but you have to cut out a few people from participation because it's dangerous for them. That is a problem. You can't achieve the perfection of having everybody's opinion participate in decision-making in politics. It has never worked, and it wouldn't work also in this case. I think the important thing to achieve is to arrive at a high quality of agreement and consensus, that the politics that we are making is actually going to be most satisfactory also for the ones that did not participate. And it's normal in politics that only a small percentage of the population even cares, and everybody else is just going about their business. So in any case, it will always be, you can't achieve the perfection of everybody on the planet. But right now, politics is so skewed. We're having such terrible politics in this period of life. We're having the most unequal situation in human history. We're having the most terrible economic system. And the agreement to change these things, the consensus on changing these things, must be enormous. It must be huge. And it's just not being able to exercise political agency for so many reasons that are structural. So even if only 10% of us was participating, if 1% of the population, it would still be thousands. If thousands of people use a platform like that, I'm sure it will not output a thing saying capitalism, which makes 8 or maybe 98 persons as rich as half of humanity, is a good idea. Well, let's stick to that. No, it's probably going to be different. I don't think it is essential for good DiEM politics that everybody must be able to participate. And it's much more important that the political process is transparent so that we can catch lobbyism, abuse, tricks. Because otherwise, we'll be failing much harder.
I just wanted to add, in relation to what the lady said, I very much see your point, and I agree with you to some extent, yet I would say that isn't a reason to, as you said, to disacknowledge the having a transparent voting, because I think our goal should be to change the structure of society that makes such a transparent voting not possible. So I think it shouldn't be, okay, we need to adapt the voting to the system, but we should change the system so that such voting is possible. And to Alex, what Alex said early on with the swimming pool and the garden, I would say this pressure, though, is in itself also important, so that you are invited to discuss with your family or with your friends, well, actually, this is my opinion because of this, and it's not, well, I'm not sure if I want to tell you, but it's, okay, I need to talk to you about this and come to a conclusion together. So that's why I think, yeah, that would also be a good idea. Thank you very much.
You could have a situation here where second choices could win.
Yes.
So, because the people had options, or they had to have three different options, a second thing could see. So I would want the camping, but I have to choose a second and a third. My choice, my real choice, was the camping. So I need to have a second choice. So probably it wouldn't be my choice, would be my second choice that would win.
Well, yeah, basically, in the case of you only having your first choice or being able to make only one choice, you wouldn't have won anyways. So at least it is something happening that is more preferable to you than not getting what you want at all, because otherwise it would always be the third thing.
Yeah, the mathematics is such that you're not having a disadvantage by having a second choice. It's still clear what your primary choice is. It's not going to be used against you in a way. It just avoids the third choice winning if you're totally against it. If you're actually against both, you can vote against both, and then you're just for one thing. And if everybody does it that way, then we get to the old style of voting. But that's their conscious choice. So in most cases, it works out.
Actually, to maybe short parallel with something exactly like this, which is your worry, does also have an effect, if you permit me, in Hollywood, with the Oscars. So they changed the voting system to exactly this voting system a few years ago. And you can see very remarkably, from then onwards, very bland movies win. Because when you had only one vote, then you could have like a art house film actually win, because it was the most exciting. But because of this system now, what often happens is the most, like, you know, La La Land, or like, you know, films that are much more, oh, that's a good second choice, and that often wins. But let's keep in mind that there's a difference between voting on something for artistic merit and what is good for all of us which has real life consequence, right? Also, not refuting what you're saying, but also giving another example where actually exactly what you are describing does already happen. And I think in that sense, it might be less interesting to have that in that venue. But I think for like public, social, bigger things that influence people also in sometimes ways we do not see for many, many years, this it might be actually more consensus building in that sense, right?
This type of voting has also been discussed in Greece at the constitutional level for the elections of different parties for the parliamentary elections, and it has not been implemented yet or has not been made a decision. But the logic behind when somebody goes to election to vote for the first preference and second and third preference is, or at least for the first and second preference parties, is to then. If you add first and second choices, you end up giving more power to the central parties, the parties that are more covering most of the people in the country. And that has been, and the arguments pro and con about this is that if you do this 1-2-3 voting, you tend to favor the middle of the road opinion in the country. Whereas if you just go for the first only, you favor more the extreme, the single opinion.
Yes, Germany has a mechanism for favoring the central opinion by also having the vote on a country level, where like on a regional level, and on the regional level, those people who are already elected also get to have an extra position in the Bundesrat, and so it's always the CDU and SPD kind of dealing it out between each other, In Italy, we also have the preferential voting on the candidates, and also in America, I think it exists in different places. So you can have the surprise effect that an independent candidate for a party is actually winning and not the one that the party chose. Like here in Germany, the lists of the candidates are defined by the party, and that's it. And in Italy, you can pick a different candidate. So if a candidate is very successful promoting themselves, they can become the representative of a party that the people chose.
How verifiable or how transparent is the vote? How could I or could everybody see what everybody's voting? Yeah, everybody. So everyone is able to harm someone who's not voting in their thinking.
Well, that's the amazing thing, that it kind of actually works. Because harming somebody is a lot of effort, and if you have thousands of people, it's just not too expensive.
I think maybe, or at least my opinion that I would like to say, so that you can criticize it because I'm not too sure about it, would be that such a voting system would work very, very well in a movement where there's no power structure in that is connected to violence, with which I could hurt you if you weren't, in my opinion. Yeah, once when you move to a state level where you have a government with an executive power that obviously controls army and police, then I would say secret voting is better, so that they cannot pick out people who didn't favour their party, didn't favour them in power, and thus can pick on them or bully them into doing that. So, yeah.
Yes, but ironically, that is exactly what that research paper found out, that also in parliaments, secret vote is the method that is most used to do corruption, to do what the lobbyist wants from you. Because otherwise, if all the public can see what you voted, then you're getting in trouble. In a case of a secret vote, you can do what the lobbyist asks you to.
I don't think you understood me. I don't mean okay. In parliament. I mean when people vote, who's supposed to go to parliament.
Oh, okay. Yeah, election is a whole different ballgame. And the liquid feedback developers are convinced you must not do elections transparently. You shouldn't be doing elections on liquid feedback. But even that is currently kind of questioned, if that is actually so dramatic. Elections might be okay. And in the Italian Power Party, we've been doing small-scale elections all the time, like somebody getting somebody asks, I would like to do a campaign, design a flyer, I don't know, do something like this. And they get a mandate, yeah, go ahead, do it. And so these are kind of temporary mandates to do a certain job without having to be an elected member of some leadership organ. And it's also very spontaneous. It's not such a large power position at all. And so that is something we frequently elect transparently, and I haven't seen problems with that so far.
Well, I wanted to come back to this peer group argument for a moment. Obviously, this meaningful argument was, for example, wasn't the best. But, for example, I'm coming from East Germany, countryside. And imagine voting about something about refugees, migration, or whatever, and you're being confronted with people which are real, Nazis, racists.
They wouldn't be in this microphone.
But they wouldn't be part of DiEM25, would they? They would be, you know, this kind of voting is meant for kind of a homogenic organization already, right? This is like within the parliament or within this group which already has certain values. I mean, I'm just expecting not meeting Nazis in this place.
Yeah, I think there's a misconception here. This is an internal decision tool for everyone who's in the party, and your IFD fellows in your hometown wouldn't be in here, and it's not for election on a national level, or currently not. It's just we who have decided to join this party, we all use it, we all see what we do, but we don't post it to our friends in, I don't know, our football club or whatever.
Thank you. Yes, a lot of things. I wonder if it is possible to have some sort of mixed system where yes, where you so where votes are available on demand but not necessarily immediately transparent to everybody. So you can request to have access to these votes, but the voting history is not necessarily available, as you say, for people outside of the party, for example. So you can request, but it's not necessarily in a platform, a public platform for everybody to see. Maybe this can be one?
Yes,
something.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is how it's being practiced.
Okay, good. And another thing that I wanted to ask is, the people that you delegate your votes to, is your delegation to history secret? Or, for example, if I want to support an opinion, but I don't necessarily want to be seen voting in it because of the reasons that you are... and I delegate my vote to someone that I know will vote in this particular way. Is the people I delegate to also in a record, or is this kind of a secret?
Okay, so the first question, all the deployments of liquid feedback I've seen in political parties was such that the data was not available to externals. So that has been designed into the software from the beginning, and it's the default condition. So you can make it visible from outside how much consensus there exists for certain proposals, but you don't see names and specific data. That is something that is important for the ones who are participating, and so you may want to check who is participating, the criteria of the selection of who's a member. And the second question was...
The history of delegations.
Process of you changing delegation is not stored. It's stored what delegation you had when the voting happened. So in this way, it is actually quite frequent that when people feel like, if I vote publicly against the proposal of my friend, he might get angry at me. Yes, this is a scenario that can happen. And the trick is usually that you just delegate to a person that you expect to be voting against, and you just pretend like, oh, I wasn't careful, I didn't pay attention, I'm sorry, that I trusted a person that knew better. And so, yeah, I always have an excuse that you didn't put your own name, you voted against something that your friend was promoting.
I have a question in another direction. In Democratie, in Bewegung, we have another software to discuss the proposals. And you did have a view on it. What do you think about the discourse software in comparison to Liquid Feedback platform? And there could be maybe a possibility to combine them?
Before you answer that question, could you maybe just very briefly describe, just in a few sentences, how this like physically works? So you log in, you get a question, just so people really understand as an introduction to, and then describe discourse so it's a bit more easy for everybody to understand.
Well, both software are you log into something and then you're presented some possibilities to do things. In the case of Liquid Feedback, you are working with specific proposals and issues, and which is kind of more technical, but it's also, yeah, it has to be a little complicated. You have to learn a little bit, but it's worth it. And it's not that hard. In our case, we have in the Italian Power Party, we have a lot of elderly people, because it's a tradition in Italy that pensioners get very political when they have more time. And they just, as soon as we made the instrument, the deciding platform, like we made it obvious you have to use this to be deciding things, they learned within weeks. They learned to use it immediately, and they refined their skills with time. And it happened just by trying out. Because there was the urgency of wanting to do it, then you just understand after time how it works. And you don't even have to read the manual. You can read the manual if you like. So that was a big difference compared to other deployments of Liquid Feedback, where it was only a survey tool. So a lot of people were too lazy to even start. And then the survey was not going to be representative, and so you couldn't actually take decisions on the basis of a survey. And that is not a good approach. So getting back to discourse, we actually use discourse in the Pirate Party in Italy as well. That's because the discourse serves a different purpose. It serves the ongoing discussion. And it would be cool if we had a great way of integrating the two tools. Right now, it's like with everybody. Everybody has to log in into both platforms. And discourse knows nothing about delegations, about the consensus, and that, which could have been a plus to make a more intelligent forum. But right now, that's the way it is. Discourse is among the least worst forums I found out so far. Still, the way you cite people and you comment on... it's very important that you can cite somebody and then add new thinking to what that person said. And that thing must be as barrier-free as possible. And discourse has a funny syntax, but you can ignore the syntax. You don't need to learn it. You just mouse-click the part that you want to comment. You click on, I want to comment this, and then you start writing your comment. And so it's sufficiently barrier-free to have a rational, advanced discourse on topics. And that is something that which is missing from a lot of forum software.
Just a very quick one, considering that there's a few more workshops, we would like to end in about 12 minutes, quarter past. Well, if you have any more slides, perhaps.
My question is rather practical. Considered we as a travel elite decide we want liquid feedback, how do we implement it as a structure? So I see a problem of legitimacy. So the point is, how do we come to that we implement it as DM25 as a European tool? So the technical side it's the technical side that interests me. How do we implement it properly? So that is democratically viable.
Perfect. Yes, I missed out that quite essential thing. I think it's in my next slides. Should I not answer it well enough, then remind me. How to use Liquid Feedback? It's important to know who is participating, of course, because otherwise you'd be... If somebody can just create logins, I've seen a deployment of Liquid Feedback like that was ridiculous. Some hacker friends immediately started making automatic registrations of logins, and then they could decide every voting by themselves. It was a media stunt for a television channel. It was completely silly. So what you want is a transparent and identified and authenticated method of accrediting the people that are participating. In the Italian Pirate Party, we have a method of having several testimonies look at an identification document of a person, and then we register the hash code of a unique finance number, so they cannot go somewhere else and register again. And we have a testimony that this is the person without having to store the document itself, because that's ugly. Other movements have been actually storing real document images like of passports. That's terrible, but it's not necessary. And the important thing to make it legally binding, you have to integrate it into the statutes, or you can call it bylaws or organizing principles. There are several words for it. Into the legal documents of your organization so that it is the platform that takes decisions. And from then on, you have the democracy kind of at heart. What we've been using it for is to develop the political program, obviously. And that's something that I was always amazed that we ended up, even when we were small, we ended up having pretty advanced and intelligent political ideas. Because the method of congregating the thinking works so much better than the typical round table or the small group in a mailing list or a few people getting together and everybody else is outside. Or the messy situation of everybody discussing somehow on a forum and it never gets somewhere. And instead it was very pleasant that it actually evolved into really good ideas. And it was even more impressive in that short period when there were 10,000 people working on one platform.
those proposals were mind-blowing, from my opinion. Another great use is if you have a parliamentary group, you can kind of tell them what they are supposed to do, and that's very powerful. You can avoid having an elected leadership. You can have a virtual board of directors. That means anyone who has access time can participate. But thanks to the liquid democratic modeling, you don't end up having a dominance of the active people, like in the case of Occupy Wall Street. That was the thing that collapsed for Occupy, that there was always dominant people taking the decisions, and the majority was staying home, and the movement would go in a direction that the 99% didn't agree upon at all. So if you want to be the 99%, you have to have a good model to stay the 99% and not develop strange opinions. And that is something that can be done this way. And of course, the Permanent Assembly, actually we had plans of doing a European liquid democracy deployment, and we kind of failed for both bureaucratic and other crazy aspects. So it's terrible. Once you have created a representative structure, it is really hard to convince them to let go. And we had the problem in the Pirate Power movement as well. Like, we had created the Pirate Parties International, and we have created the European Pirate Party, etc. So we have all these structures to aggregate the opinions, and so we have delegates from each country that meet in Brussels to take the decisions together, the pirates, the European pirates, etc. We have exactly that kind of stupid architecture, which creates a lot of bias, because those people that are delegated have a lot more power than the average people that stay at home, and they only reflect a certain opinion of the entire party. So you get this detachment from the regional national parties, and you end up having a kind of architecture which is so similar to the European Commission itself. So that would have been very useful if we had actually deployed EuroLiquid. But interestingly, whoever was already in those roles was not exactly excited to give up those roles. And that's why we kept on having a traditional architecture, which is very sad. Another aspect is when it comes to doing a constitutional assembly. Well, we don't have to make everyone participate, but still the idea of doing a constitutional assembly for the EU, to me it makes much more sense to have a large liquid feedback platform instead of electing people that are supposed to write the constitution.
Could you run us through the entire process from when a first proposal comes out, then other proposals, sub-proposals come in, how, from all these several five proposals that are competing with each other, one is chosen and is finally voted and becomes constitutional?
The thing is that we have the quorum, we have these quorums, so all the proposals that have not enough agreement do not even get to vote. So you only have very high consensus things that are at the option. And it's also, you might not necessarily want, or maybe only a final vote when you already have reached an extreme consensus. Like, let the debate go on until you reach 80-90%. Oh, actually, for a constitution, we really want a lot. And only when that has reached, then we just do a confirmation, formal voting, and finalize the document, and wow, we created a constitution together. Yes. And it's important to have facilitation in the remixing, the ongoing remixing process, which is still imperfect in liquid feedback. There needs to be extra tools and for improvements. But using other software can be tricky. If it's not transparent or verifiable, then it's a voting machine and you don't know what's going on. That's not good. If it doesn't have this transitive liquid democracy, and a lot of liquid democracy tools don't have this transitive aspect, then the mechanisms that the researchers looked at doesn't actually work. So it's still the liquid feedback is still the best implementation so far. I would be happy to have more choice. In regards of the necessary statutes, that's actually what we've been discussing and working on. Because that's the first time we heard the idea of doing an EU constitution. And actually, the Icelandic Pirate Party had suggested it before, so there's already people thinking in the same direction. And it would be nice to
I was proposing to do a kind of liquid feedback or liquid democracy-based system for doing this, and I was essentially discussing the same things. I have a slightly larger slide on the topic of how to get people to collaborate peacefully and not kill each other, and to have minorities be respected, and have everyone a real freedom to express themselves. And this is the kind of legal architecture that I consider, which makes sense to have, is to have this software act both for the legislative decision-making as for a virtual board of directors, which is technically exactly the same. You're just using the liquid feedback, and it feels just the same, but there are some differences in the policies and the differences in the way it's integrated into the legal architecture. And then we would still need the coordination for strategic coordination and stuff, and coordination of the movement, etc. But the internal problems between the people, the moderation should be independent, and resolving inner justice. And the integrity, or you can call it the validation council, would make sure that the assembly is not going to decide anything that is inconsistent with what they decided before. So if you decide you're going to respect human rights, then you can no longer decide that you're going to enslave or kill Bill Gates or something. Recently, since this last summer, I've been having many conversations with nice political groups that are running into these kind of scenarios and problems. And so I created an independent working group on this topic, which is not a DiEM25 group, although I frequently see DiEM25 participants. We are meeting frequently here in Berlin, and we are working on an abstract general solution architecture with the kind of how to do moderation rules so that they are how to improve justice. So it goes also into the issues of diversity and inclusion, and on the other hand, how to write a legal document that will enable an architecture like that and maximize the democracy that technology of today makes possible. Seen from the aspect that the Italian Power Party has been running on this kind of architecture since 2015, it took us some time to understand, to improve, to remix, to rewrite our own statutes. But then since 2015, we kind of have almost this kind of architecture, and it's working pretty well, so why not talk about it? So if you want to participate more frequently, if you're interested, we also have a mailing list kind of thing. It's not directly connected to Democracy Lab or Democracy in DiEM, whatever.
Thank you very much, Carlo.
Thank you for the good questions and the nice debate, and I'd love to have more debate. We have all the time. No, we don't, but the time we have, we have.
Quick coffee break, and then we're going to continue with two more workshops in the same spaces.
Okay, unfortunately, I missed the beginning of the session, but I could give a quick update on how we are in DiEM right now in terms of improving our internal democracy. Did you talk about that?
We didn't really talk about that. I think this is more... can you specify a little bit more your question?
The state of things. I would give an update on that.
Okay.
I thought it might be interesting to the people who came to this session. So you know that right now, it's basically to have an all-member vote. We're waiting for a group like the Belgrade TSC or the Italians in DiEM and so on to approach us with a kind of a proposal. Which they have discussed locally and which is approved locally, like the Amsterdam group wanted to run for elections. Now, actually, it's part of the CC's work to make sure that in Amsterdam, actually, all the DiEM people have been involved and are in favor of running for elections. It's not just a project of a few people. And so if that has been verified, then we're saying, okay, let's have an all-member vote on this issue, presenting all opinions that there are on this issue and enough background information for everyone to make this decision. So right now, it's basically when we see that there's a big push, like within Amsterdam or within Italy or within those DiEMers interested in ecology, to have a certain vote, then we try to have an all-member vote with all the preparation that entails, with the translation into 7 languages, newsletters, a second newsletter, and so on. So this is currently mostly based on the CC's evaluation of the situation, whether the people have been discussing it enough, whether there is really support for it within at least that group that suggests it. But this way we're trying to make sure that even small groups, like even the Belgrade City Group, which is just a few people, have a chance to bring in this kind of proposal and have it voted by DiEM. Now, what we're trying to do in the next few months is to set up a proposal platform which would make it more visible to everyone how much support there is for any kind of idea, so that we could have a better overview of which proposals might be voted in an all-member vote. So it would be less than an all-member vote, but it would be a way to move these proposals along and give an idea of how many people support it. I don't think it will be something automatic, though, because otherwise the Belgrade City group still doesn't have a chance of getting more than a few votes to start their all-member vote. So, but it's currently a project of the Internal Democracy Group together with the Democracy Lab and other DSCs that have formed on the topic of democracy. They're talking about how best to implement this kind of system without disadvantaging people that don't speak English and other considerations. As for the forum, I think it's generally agreed that we need a better forum, and that will be coming sooner. That's all.